WOOC labor talk host and roaming correspondent Willie Terry attended the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists Region 1 Conference on 47 Years Strong, Saving Our Heritage at the Albany Hilton Hotel, August 16th, 19th of this year, where he recorded a speech in the Health and Wellness Workshop given by Dr. Brenda Robinson, CEO of the Black Nurses Association, on slave food versus soul food. Dr. Robinson is also Albany Commissioner for Human Rights. This is part one of a three-part segment on her presentation.
Dr. Brenda Robinson.
Thank you all for having me. As you know, I'm Dr. Brenda Robinson, born and raised right here in Albany. I am CEO of the Black Nurses Coalition. I am also the City of Albany's Human Rights Commissioner, and that's a busy job as well. And also Albany Public Library trustee, re-elected twice. So I'm pretty busy. I love the union, go unions, we need them, and it's very important. But I'm gonna speak a little bit about the history of Albany and history of slavery, because we're gonna get to that slave food in a minute. Now, oftentimes people think people went up north to get away from slavery and to be free, but New York State was very big on slavery, and it was a lot of money. So slavery was here as well. And Albany was very influential in slavery and in abolition, right? Railroad came right through there. Down the street from my house is the Harriet Myers house. They were very influential in helping abolitionists and Harriet Tubman, those people who came through the Underground Railroad. We have the oldest church here in New York State as well, who was very influential and abolition as well, and it's the Israel AME Church. And that's still a beautiful church, it still exists today. A demonstration about slavery and slave food. I'm like, wow, I'm gonna go to that. So I went to the Timbrook Mansion, right? I just wanna tell you a little bit about that. Abraham Timbrook, that was his house. Very influential. He, once upon a time, was the mayor of Albany. He did all these things, appointed to all these different things. He even was trustee at Union College, where my daughter graduated from. I'm like, wow, he did all these things. And his brother-in-law was Philip Livingston. I'm like, wow, I went to Philip Livingston school. I'm like, okay, all right, this is where these names came from. I live right here in Albany and really didn't realize that, right? So while I'm there and I'm, you know, doing this little history, well, lo and behold, when you see all this Timbrook around in Albany, well, I was a slave owner. My daughter lives on Timbrook Street. She didn't even know that. So Timbrook Mansion was really ran by 12 slaves, 12 plus slaves, right? So we went through the mansion, and it was a very interesting thing because we went down to the kitchen to see where the slaves really cooked. When you talk about slave food, let's talk about what they went through. This is a picture off of Google of a slave in front of a hearth in which they cooked their meal, right? All right, this is another picture showing how they lit the fires, how you gotta bend over, pick up these heavy pots, and all the things that the slaves went through to prepare food back in those days. It wasn't an easy thing, right? Now, this is Beverly Padgett. If you're from Albany, you know Beverly. She's always on Facebook talking about something. But anyway, she showed up to the Timbrook Mansion as well, right? And it's funny, you see her there bent over. She's not bent over because she actually lifts any of those pots. She does that all the time. So it has nothing to do with the presentation or her experience there. But those pots were 5 to 10 pounds empty. So can you imagine a slave having to lift that? Imagine putting food in that? When you're talking about slave food, can you think about those women and men? Because some of the men were cooks too. How they really had to have that type of strength and how it wore and tore on their bodies when they had to lift those pots. And we know back then they didn't have workers' comp. They didn't have SEIU. They didn't have union to protect them. It was nothing. So you see the wear and tear of what happened as far as slavery. And this is right on at Timbrook Mansion right here in Albany. They do free tours. If you ever want to get a good up close and personal look at it, it's right there. They have to get up extra early in the morning, go to bed late at night. And that, you know, is a constant thing. Now the other thing that I realized too about getting up early and late at night, it was freezing cold in here. Went to this presentation, I'm like, what the? So I would have wore more clothing if I knew that. So it was no heat. So when the slaves get up in the morning, it's really cold in there. So, you know, until they get that fire going again, that was, you talking about working conditions, wow, we knew slaves had it bad, but a lot of people think if you were a cook that you had it a lot better, but I'm not so sure, right? So it gives you a different look on slave food and how people handle it and how it was prepared. This is one of the cookbooks. They have several cookbooks there if you're ever interested. And I think her presentation was really good because she spoke about the sugar trade that came through. So if you lived in a city where sugar was plentiful, then your meals revolved around that. If it was flour, your meals revolved around that. She also mentioned how, and she prepared the meal for us the way the slaves did. She said she took some of the recipes and tried to do it in her Cuisinart, but it wouldn't work. So when you use those old time ingredients, the microwave is not gonna work, your blender and all those type of things is not gonna work. And this is one of the things that we had. She made a cranberry tart, and actually it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. She made a few other things, some turkey, some other things that I didn't enjoy so much. They kept that. But I took a picture of this, because this was tolerable. The rest of it, nah. So it was just very enlightening to be there to get that type of experience. We did walk through the house in little secret tunnels and stuff, and I wasn't really too much interested in that. But it was very, very enlightening to learn and see how people really prepared food back then. And we're also going to talk about slave food, waste not, want not. Whatever slave master didn't want, that's what we got. We all know that, right? Right? But a misconception is about this meat. Slaves basically were vegetarians back then, seldom any meat. Now I know some people around here my age, have you guys ever heard of the book, How to Eat to Live?
Yes.
Back in the 60s, everybody's reading that book, right? I wrote it, I read it way back then too. And it was funny because when I listened to Shirley Caesar talking about the beans, potatoes, and all that, when you read How to Eat to Live and look in that book, he says most of the stuff she's talking about you shouldn't be eating because it wasn't meant for human consumption. For those potatoes and things like that, those were things that went to waste product and it wasn't meant for us. So, you know, I took another look at the book and I think being older when I read the book is a little bit differently. So if you haven't read it and you're older now, try reading it again. One of the things that he spoke about is No breads and no cornbread. This is in How to Eat to Live book, right? He says if you eat bread or cornbread, you should cook it 2 to 3 times. All right, I'm reading it, and I'm reading it differently now. These are older eyes. Plus, I had to have my glasses way back then. I didn't. So I got my glasses on reading. I'm like, okay, well, if I got bread, cook it 1 time, it's good. Cook it 2 times, it's toast. All right, go with the toast. 3 times, I don't think so. Can you imagine cooking your cornbread 2 or 3 times? Who's going to eat that? So I'm like, what was Elijah talking about? So one of the things that he did mention was that when you eat these type of foods, especially bread, when it gets in your system, it rises again because of the yeast, right? I said, what is wrong with Elijah? I'm reading this. I'm like, did I read this years ago? Is this really what he was talking about? So then the next paragraph it says down there, when he speak about how the starches turn to sugars and how we're more apt to have diabetes. Like, all right, now he got his thinking cap on. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that first paragraph was about, but yeah, okay, now he has something there. Okay, so he brought in little diabetes, so I'm like, okay, that's good. That's very good. Lay off the breads because of that. So that's a great thing. So then we talk about pork, right? Oftentimes people think all this pork came from slavery, blah, blah, blah. I don't eat pork. If you eat pork, lay off of it. I'm not here to preach to you, tell you not to eat pork, but I'm going to tell you about it. So how pork came about is back in the days when the slaves, they were mainly vegetarians, they had their greens, right? Oftentimes, you know, it's a season for everything. So all season, they wanted to preserve the greens. What they did, they put fat back on top of the greens to preserve them. So during the times of no crop, they still had greens. Lo and behold, later on, it was like, this green tastes good with this pork on it. And that's how it came about. So then when you get the greens, I don't care if it's hot outside or not, you're going to put that pork in there, and that's what they started doing. But we know, as far as the pig, and this is also in How to Eat to Live book 2 and several other books about the pig being 99.9% poisonous, right? But I just find it really humorous and comical when I read certain portions of his book because he was saying, you can't even poison the pig. And I was just cracking up laughing. I'm like, okay, all right. He said, pigs can eat lye and nothing happens. He said, a snake can even bite a pig or hog, nothing happened. And then the hog can turn around and eat the snake. I'm like, wow, that's something, right? So when you take a look at it, especially look at something from older eyes as opposed to when you was younger, because younger when I read that book, I'm like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, well, I got to lay off this, I got to lay off that. But now I can be more objective about what I read and decide what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do. And I also can look at a book and find it humorous, even though he's serious. But, you know, you take things with a grain of salt, you fit things into your diet the way that you can fit things into your diet. We know the right things to do, but, you know, we want you to improve or not necessarily say, okay, you're going to go home and throw out everything in your refrigerator. No, you're not going to do that. Stuff is too expensive. So slave food, soul food, and southern food. And it's just one little clarification I want to make. When people talk about soul food, especially in the South, one of the reasons why they make a differentiation between soul food, and I know Oprah did a big thing on it, about the soul food came about in 1964. That's when they started talking about it. But folks talked about soul way back in the 40s and 50s. But when you take a good look at it, if you're talking about soul food, you go to a soul food restaurant, you know a black person is there cooking. You go to a southern restaurant, it's probably a white person cooking that food. So that's why we got these terms to make sure we know where we're going. If I pull up into a soul food restaurant, and it's white people, Caucasian, whatever term you want to use, they're in there cooking. I'm like, something wrong. But I'm not going to that southern restaurant. I said, hey, how you doing, sir? Yes, thank you. You know, because you expect that. So those are some of the things that definitely differentiate some of the terms that we have. And slave food does not necessarily transition to soul food. We do our own thing. And it's a good thing because we're very diverse. We all come from different places, so it's great. But what I will say to you in regards to the slave food, the soul food, and the southern food, make sure that you know that you should, I don't care what you're eating, lay off those sweets, lay off those starches. You know that. You know our history. You know our history. You know about pork. You know about cardiovascular disease. We all know about these things. But later on, I'm going to speak to you about how hard it is and why it's hard for us to lay off some of those things, okay?
That was WOOC labor correspondent Willie Terry, part one report from the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists Region 1 Conference Workshop on Health and Wellness, with a speech given by Dr. Brenda Robinson on slave food versus soul food. Tune in for part two and three later this week.
For those just tuning in, I'm Luke Stoddard-Nathan.
And I'm Kleanna Lightborn. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM Troy.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or a sour bone to pick, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.